This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and here we are once again. It is midsummer. Most of us are sweltering or on vacation or too hot to move, but here we are continuing to provide you with updated health dispatches from the nutritional front. Mm-hmm. And with me today, Layla Mudin, who's our nutritionist in residence. Each week we do a Q&A with Layla, and we invite your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. Radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for questions. How are you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman, how are you?
Good, good. I'm recuperating from my weekend triathlon.
Oh,
yeah,
the one you did on Long Island.
I did a Long Island triathlon.
How did that go?
That was good. I had a goal of doing it an hour and a half, and I did it in an hour and 28 minutes.
Oh, fabulous.
I was a little bit humbled by the number of really good athletes in my age group. I thought I was going to, you know, clean their clock, but there were some very, very well-trained and fit athletes in my category. So I kind of ended up in the middle of the pack. But hey,
that's so great.
Got it done. Got it done. Survived and got another T-shirt. Now I have like about a couple of dozen triathlon T-shirts, sweatshirts hanging around the house.
Terrific.
So that was good.
And that's quite a feat.
Yeah, we made a family affair. You know, a couple of us did the triathlon together. So that was fun. It was a fun day at Smith Point Park.
Okay, Smith Point Park.
Okay. Yeah, so it involves a swim, which was a relatively short swim, a 500-yard swim, which is a half a kilometer, and then followed by a 10-mile bike ride, and then followed by a 3-mile run. So very manageable. Okay. And, you know, there was I saw a 77-year-old woman complete it. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, I was ahead of her. You know, and there was actually an 80-plus contestant. I don't know how 80-plus that person was, but they were in the 80-plus category, and they completed the race, too.
Remarkable.
That's just amazing.
Yeah. Well, you know, if 50 is the new 30, then 70 is the new 50, and 80 is the new 60. So here we are.
And 65 is the new 45.
There you go.
That's
it.
I'm going with that.
Yeah.
So anyway,
that's good.
We wanted to tee off on there was a study.
Yeah.
In the American Diabetes Journal, Journal of the American Diabetes Association, sometimes referred to as JADA, right? And that study purports to show that fat is worse for you than sugar.
Yes.
So take us through the study. What did they do?
Basically, they did this very short study. They took overweight individuals, people who are already overweight, and they added 1,000 more calories a day to their diets.
The diets which were already probably not so good to begin with.
Exactly, which already got them obese in the first place. These people probably had liver disease in the first place.
Right.
And over a period of 3 weeks, they added 1,000 more calories a day.
Either of saturated fat.
Of saturated fat.
Or polyunsaturated fat.
Yeah, or of sugar.
Or sugar.
Or of sugar.
Right.
Now, when they say saturated fat, they're not really telling us what kind of saturated fat, you know, in a grass-fed steak or in a donut, which would be trans fat, which still falls under the category of saturated fat.
Right.
So what is it that they gave them? What was the delivery system of the saturated fat?
So what they found was, and this only looked at the short-term effects on the liver, on what's called fatty liver.
3 weeks.
And 3 weeks. And they found that actually the fat was worse than sugar, but both were very bad. The fat caused a 50% roughly worsening of the fatty liver. The sugar caused a 33% reduction, and I think the polyunsaturated fats were less. There was like in the teens, I think, something like that.
Okay.
So, first of all, I have a quibble with that, is that, you know, when you do a study, it's got to go through what's called an IRB, an Institutional Review Board for ethical considerations. Mm-hmm. And that's the result of something called the Tuskegee study.
Yes, the Tuskegee Airmen.
Yeah, which was a very unethical study done on black ex-servicemen, black veterans, African-Americans, who were suffering from syphilis, and they either didn't treat them or treated them. And so they had untreated, you wanted to say, what's the natural course of untreated syphilis when they actually had a treatment post-war? This was done, I think, in the 50s.
Yeah.
And so to give someone who already has metabolic syndrome, obesity, prediabetes, 1,000 extra calories, I mean, who does that?
That's like malpractice.
Right.
How did that get past an IRB?
So what it does not do is it doesn't tell us what the effects of a prudently administered high-fat, low-carb diet would be versus a low-fat, high-carb diet that's prudently administered. It basically is an add-on of all that. And we know that extra calories are going to mess up your liver.
Totally, totally. 1,000 extra calories added on to their normal
from whatever source.
From whatever source, right. Exactly. So
you can't infer from that.
This is bad science.
And the headlines were saturated fats worse than sugar for you?
No, that's terrible.
No.
And the fact that American Diabetes Association is towing that line or that message over and over, along with American Heart, who is still insisting that these vegetable oils, which we know are very pro-inflammatory, are heart healthy. They're
I think
not.
This is the dying gasp of the low fat hypothesis. It's like a futile attempt to resuscitate the low-fat hypothesis, which has been their party line for so long, and they've been so maligned for embracing it that this is like, oh, finally, we got conclusive proof. We were right all along. Fat's bad for you. Well, yes, 1,000 calories of extra fat. I mean, when was the last time you told somebody to just eat what they are eating and then just simply add a lot of fat?
Oh, no.
Right?
No, not like that.
Yeah.
That's just wrong.
Yeah.
Patently wrong. Oh, no. So hopefully these are then the last gasps.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if they're drowning, take away their straw or their snorkel or whatever. Just go already.
And this was, by the way, came to us via a vegan or, you know, sort of a pro-veggie website. And it was picked up by them as substantiation of their view that fat is the culprit in, you know, all things bad for humans.
Oh, my. Well, that's their line. It's unfortunate that they don't go and vet the study, that they don't go and see exactly what, and that it was, we believe, unethical to do it this way.
Yeah.
Terrible. To tell an obese person, eat 1,000 extra calories a day. Ridiculous. Anyway.
It's like Super Size Me.
Oh, yeah.
But then there's a whole story on Super Size Me, which was that now it turns out,
he was a drinker.
He was an alcoholic.
So he's already going to have a fatty liver, which I remember in the film, after 30 days of Super Size Me McDonald's, he had a fatty liver. Well, we don't know that that didn't exist before.
Right.
You don't necessarily have to be fat for that to happen either. So, all right. Interesting.
Well, let's get to questions.
Yes.
Radio program at AOL.com is the place to send questions. Let's see what we got in the mailbox.
We have an email from Ginger. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Love your show. I'm a very long-time listener. I'm a very healthy, active, almost 80-year-old, slight woman, 100 pounds. Very clean eater, organic eggs, fruits, veggies, salmon, no drinking, no smoking. I've had a minimal and moderate compression fracture, L3 and 4, because she picked up a toddler kind of quickly. Anyway, the only medication she's taking is levothyroxine. She has osteoporosis in her in her spine, a negative 3.9, anywhere else a negative 3.2.
That's very, very profound osteoporosis.
She doesn't want to take Prolia.
Yeah.
She'd rather go natural with supplements, exercise, and nutrition.
We saw a patient like that today.
Yeah.
We saw precisely this kind of situation.
Right.
And very bad osteoporosis.
Yep.
And I recommended, and I looked at my chart notes, I said, I recommend that you get medication. And I see that she went and got medication.
Yeah.
Because what had happened was that she was just losing bone too fast.
Yeah.
And it's dangerous because, strontium and vitamin D and Austenol, all these things are very helpful. But when you're that far gone, mm-hmm. you might need medication.
Yes. Medication along with the supplements,
and,
too.
And absolutely, sure.
There's a nice synergy there as well.
Yeah.
The supplements are still helpful. It's not necessarily one or the other. Would you agree?
Mm-hmm. So, she says she's healthy, but, we would ask questions, has she had some sort of gastrointestinal ailment, lactose intolerance? Has she...
Celiac disease.
She's also slight. She's petite, so that's a risk factor for osteoporosis.
Right.
Has she been active? Has she taken steroids?
Mm-hmm.
Did she have an early menopause?
Yeah.
Did she have, as one of our patients, the same patient who had osteoporosis for many years, she lost her periods.
Mm-hmm.
She lost her periods. I mean, so...
Another clue, I think, Ginger, you're on levothyroxine.
Oh.
How often do you get your thyroid checked?
Yeah. And
maybe it's too much?
Yeah, too much thyroid can promote osteoporosis. Although
exactly.
Thyroid usually, when regulated within the normal range, does not cause osteoporosis. But sometimes people are overzealous about thyroid. They take it like for, speed or weight loss.
Yeah.
And overzealous integrative doctors especially will put people on, 3, 4, 5 grains of Armour thyroid,
mm-hmm.
very, very high doses. And that'll, promote bone loss.
We've seen that.
Yeah.
In a woman in her 50s, I remember.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just terrified.
Yeah.
And
we were able to
normalize all of that for
mm-hmm.
her,
mm-hmm.
thankfully.
Yeah. Because we said, we couldn't figure out, why should you have such bad osteoporosis? And we went through all the things and said...
Clean diet, everything.
And then she said, thyroid. I got into that thyroid craze where the doctor gave me all this thyroid, and much too inappropriately high doses. And we took her down off that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Ginger, medication might be the answer, but get your thyroid rechecked too. Make sure it's not a lot of thyroid.
And, obviously check vitamin D and, other things. And
magnesium.
Don't forget, I keep mentioning this, olive leaf extract is the beneficial polyphenols from olive leaf
mm-hmm.
seem to have an anti-osteoporosis effect.
Yeah. Yeah. Terrific supplement. Okay.
Shout out to one of our sponsors. We're going to allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share a vital message with you. So please listen up. Here goes.
Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and as a listener of Intelligent Medicine, you can try a bottle of their finest artisanal olive oil, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. I've been enjoying these harvest fresh olive oils for years. They are far and away the brightest, most lively, and flavorful olive oils I've ever tasted. Their antioxidants and polyphenols are off the charts because they're fresh from the harvest. They make store-bought olive oils taste dull and flat by comparison. Taste for yourself. Check out this generous trial offer and get your $39 bottle for a buck with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a free and continuous resource to you. Now back to our questions. What's next, Layla?
We've got an email from Jean. Dear Dr. Hoffman, I just read your comments on the Whole30 Paleo diet, and it reminded me of this attached article a friend forwarded regarding a microbiome diet. This article was actually in the Huffington Post by Dr. Raphael Kelman.
Mm-hmm.
The basic idea is that while our genes might evolve slowly, the microbiome changes rapidly based on what we eat,
mm-hmm.
and that it's really all about the microbiome.
Yeah. That's very interesting. Let's say, evolution proceeds at a very slow pace.
Yeah.
So it's been estimated that humans began agriculture maybe 10, 12,000 years ago.
Yeah.
Maybe more recently, although there's some evidence that even before agriculture, humans did gather grains, wild grains,
mm-hmm.
and then they sort of pounded them and made them into flatbreads, which they put over hot stones. Yes. So they had kind of like paleo matzah.
Yeah.
You know, it was a grain.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But before that, humans didn't eat grains.
No.
So.
Or not often.
Now,
that was a lot of labor-intensive stuff.
Yeah.
To was, pound out.
But
all
you
of
know,
that.
when you're on the verge of starvation, which humankind has been almost all until a very recent history.
Yeah.
You eat anything. You eat anything that you can possibly find, and any way that you can put extra calories into yourself is a evolutionary advantage. So the humans expanded their diets to include grains, domesticated grains. But some things happened. What happened is, you know, there's actually evidence that the ancient Egyptians, you know, they had a much smaller stature than paleo remains.
Mm-hmm.
They had less strong bones. They even had evidence of cardiovascular disease and cancer. And diabetes is a term that's a very ancient term. It's referred to sweet urine. And so it was a product of adaptation to a new diet that the body really wasn't ready for. But what this is saying is they're actually about, I think it's to a factor of 10 or maybe 100 more genes in your GI tract among the bacteria than there are in your body.
Right.
And the bacteria replicate very rapidly, and they can adapt very rapidly to changes in diet.
Yeah.
And so maybe that has accelerated our ability to eat certain foods.
Mm-hmm. That it's the bacteria's genes that matter.
So there's an example interesting from Japan,
where
Japanese folks eat a lot of seaweed, which is really not a natural part of the human diet, but over the centuries, they've adapted to be able to digest and break down seaweed, not because their human genes do it, it's their bacterial genes.
Yes.
There's certain bacteria in Japanese, native Japanese, that seems to chew up and break down seaweed, much like termites can eat wood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, humans can't eat wood.
No.
But termites,
they can
have the ability to eat wood.
Carpenter ants.
Right.
They can eat wood. So the premise here in this article, it's not that our genes have programmed us to eat only a certain diet, like a paleo diet. Rather, our diet programs our microbiome and its genes.
Yeah, which is really a very ingenious idea.
Yeah.
And it's also been shown that if you change your diet, you change your microbiome.
Yes.
Like it
within a few days.
Right. 48 hours it changes.
They actually took a group of people given a high protein diet consisting of bacon, eggs, spare ribs, brisket, salami, cheese, pork rinds, and then they took another group.
So it's like Atkins.
Yeah. that they took another group, fed them a very high fiber diet, fruits, vegetables, grains, and the bacterial analysis of fecal samples collected before, during, after showed what each group ate, and it had an almost immediate effect on their gut bacteria. So the microbiome has a dynamic ability to respond to our diet. And helps our bodies to adapt to the many different ways of eating, which can explain in human terms across the world the various very healthy diets.
Yeah, and the adaptability of humans.
The adaptability of that.
Yeah.
So has a lot to do with our microbiome.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff.
Yeah. Good.
So Gene, thank you very much for this article.
Digression warning. Okay, we're going to go to something. So you were trained at with Dr. Atkins.
Yes.
And you worked with Dr. Atkins.
Yeah.
It's like 20 years ago or so.
Yeah.
And so the millennials have come up with this new thing. It's called Dirty Keto.
Oh, yes.
Hashtag Dirty Keto.
Uh-huh.
And it's like they've discovered the Atkins diet.
Right.
Because it's very low carb.
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of like shorthand for keto because dirty keto means... you know, you have like, you know, you go to a fast food place and you throw away the bun, you know, eat the cheeseburger with the melted
bacon,
American
cheese and all that.
And you have that.
Yeah.
It's called dirty keto. Or, you know, you just go to the supermarket and you get like, you know, a container of salami or bologna or something.
Exactly.
Like,
bunch of Slim Jims.
Yeah.
Make you a little manic. All that glutamate.
Pork rinds.
Pork rinds. That's a fun one.
And actually, I don't think Atkins would have been so down on that. Do you think?
He wouldn't necessarily be completely down on that, but I don't think he'd want you having a diet of salami and cheese either.
Okay.
What they're calling dirty keto is basically an improper way of doing Atkins.
Yeah, like a shorthand,
he still wants you
fast
to eat.
Food, not great quality.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You don't want to have to rely on that. But if you did... that better that you eat that rather than, say, the pizza and French fries diet, mm-hmm. which would not be any kind of keto.
Better without the bun than with the bun.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. For the purposes, certainly, of weight loss, you know, it
right.
could work, right? And, anyway, so that's, look for dirty keto. It's
look
like
for dirty keto. Yeah. Right. Speaking of appetite, we've got another great question here from Linda. Can both you and Dr. Hoffman explain why people lose their appetites?
Do both of us have to do that?
You could do that. I could
okay.
do that. Okay.
Right.
Specifically, the physiology and natural ways to boost appetite. Mm-hmm. Is there a situation where decreased appetite is nothing to worry about? This is three podcasts.
Yeah, it's a discourse. But, you know,
yeah.
okay, I mean, look, I mean, I'm going to do the medical part.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because from mm-hmm. the medical standpoint, mm-hmm. loss of appetite, you know, we abbreviate it in a medical chart, LOA,
yeah.
with LELOA, you know, or it's actually referred to as anorexia, but it's not pathological anorexia.
Exactly. It's not deliberate anorexia.
It's anorexia yeah. nervosa. And it has mm-hmm. to do, many gastrointestinal ailments cause
yes.
that.
Mm-hmm.
Ulcers cause that. You know, any ailment of the gastrointestinal tract, gallbladder disease.
Yes.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Inflammatory bowel disease
yeah.
may cause that too. Celiac
cancer
disease.
Cancer
can
and
cause
it. Could be
it.
A sign of cancer developing.
Fatty liver or cirrhosis of the liver can cause early satiety,
yeah.
meaning loss
yeah.
of appetite.
Yeah. yeah.
All of that.
Depression can cause that.
Depression can
yeah.
cause
yeah.
it, exactly.
Yeah, so there is a differential diagnosis.
Grief
yeah,
can
absolutely.
Cause it.
We just saw a patient,
his
wife died.
Yeah,
and
he lost weight.
Lost 15 pounds.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Since
yeah.
And we talked all about the
yeah.
weight regain,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
the quality of his appetite
yeah.
lately.
Yeah.
We got into all of that.
Yeah.
When is it nothing to worry about?
And by the way, and there,
yeah.
when it's accompanied by weight loss as you get older, it's sarcopenia.
Yes, which is a loss of muscle mass.
Yeah.
And remember that muscle is more dense than fat, weighs more.
Mm-hmm.
So sarcopenia is actually, you're going to see more weight loss when you lose muscle,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
as you would also on a very low-calorie, low-fat diet.
Right.
Is losing more
so,
muscle. When is decrease appetite nothing to worry about? When it only lasts a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
Say you had a passing bug,
or yeah.
you overindulged the previous day, you're not too hungry today.
Mm-hmm.
That's normal.
Mm-hmm.
That would be normal.
I mean, rarely can be due to some brain problem like a brain tumor, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah. So when is it nothing to worry about? When it passes, when it's only mm-hmm. temporary.
Yeah.
Temporary meaning over the course of a few days.
Yeah, and I think it's actually loss of appetite is something that, you know, should engender a medical workup.
That's true. Other reasons for loss of appetite, cancer treatments,
mm-hmm.
maybe
oh, sure.
HIV and AIDS treatments.
Absolutely.
A lot of these drugs mm-hmm. have such adverse
There's certain
effects.
Drugs, yes.
So that can be a problem,
mm-hmm.
any medication that the person is on. An inner ear disturbance
yeah.
can cause nausea, motion sickness.
Exactly.
This was something that happened to me back in 1996.
It's great for losing weight.
Oh, but I was motion sick. Suddenly I'm on a bus and I'm like, I haven't felt like this
yeah.
since I was four.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
So that was
it's
an inner ear
It's a vestibular
thing.
Condition of the inner ear.
Right. So I imagine, I'm trying to think of any other instances where loss of appetite is more of a problem.
Keto, flu kind of thing.
Keto, flu, or when you're on a very long-term ketogenic diet, the
mm-hmm.
hunger simply just goes away.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you just have to remember to eat.
Mm.
Some people complain that, well, I'm just not interested in food anymore. This
mm-hmm.
is a common complaint among keto dieters is, I'm just not interested in food, so I don't bother. I'm eating.
I would also throw in taste and smell disorders.
Yes.
You know, can do that.
Right, right. People who have diminished taste
mm-hmm.
or diminished smell, which is 75% of our taste,
yeah.
is our ability to smell.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be that. A helpful supplement for those who have lost their appetites for no good reason,
mm-hmm.
zinc.
Okay.
And even amongst those with anorexia,
yeah,
zinc is a very good
mm-hmm.
idea.
Yeah.
Zinc is a very good idea. Yeah.
And there's a ton of medications that make you want to eat like a house on fire, unfortunately.
That's true.
And, you know, among them, Megace,
which
is a form of progesterone, which unfortunately is used as a birth control pill to give you an injection of that same type of progesterone. And it's horrible. It's like birth control, but it makes you gain a lot of weight and it affects your mood in a horrible way. And
back in my hospital days, I remember Marinol based on...
Oh, Marinol, which is
cannabis,
marijuana. Yeah.
Marijuana.
Sure. Hey.
Talk about the munchies. Here's a drug to help you get the munchies so you
absolutely.
Eat more. So that's why it's beneficial for those on chemotherapy. So, Lynn, what a great question.
But, another one I just mentioned is that for people who have a type of indigestion, sometimes I get a little, rarely, this may be every couple of years, because I have a good digestion, but sometimes I feel like just a fullness, like my digestion stopped. And I can empathize with people who have like early satiety, bitters, digestive bitters.
Yeah.
And if I'm traveling, and sometimes this will happen when I'm very stressed, I'm running around through airports. I'll go to the bar and I'll ask just for Angostura bitters without
and
the alcohol.
A little seltzer?
Yeah, with seltzer, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it just does something to relax the spasm, that's causing like a blockade of your digestion.
It's,
it helps with peristalsis. Mm-hmm. It's a chloretic, which actually helps with release of bile.
Other reasons for loss of appetite, gastroparesis.
We just keep going.
SIBO. Right.
Yeah, gastroparesis.
SIBO. Is a discourse.
Yeah.
Candida overgrowth.
And let's explain what gastroparesis is. It's like a slowing down of your gastrointestinal motility, which can sometimes be spontaneous or it can arise from diabetes as a consequence of diabetes. Mm-hmm. Diabetes affecting the internal nerves, not just the external nerves in your toes, your sensory nerves.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Dementia.
Yeah, dementia, I would say, too.
In, say, in the elderly, people will forget when they last ate, may not be tuned in to their hunger cues or anything like that.
Yeah.
People with altered mental status. Could go on and on all day here.
Yeah.
About loss of appetite. That's always a very, very big one.
Yeah.
And, of course, the first thing to look for in an acute situation is malnutrition, albumin levels, prealbumin levels, all of that. Any quick weight loss or weight loss over a discrete period of time, that might put them at nutritional risk. That's something to assess.
Yeah, it requires a bit of a workup.
Yeah, it's a workup. So, Lynn, lots of things to look at here for why people lose their appetites.
Yeah.
Okay. And, there are some people who are emotional eaters.
Mm-hmm.
They'll eat when they're nervous or anxious. And other people, they're the exact opposite.
I know.
If they're sad or if they're anxious,
that makes
they're
for,
not hungry.
That makes for
I
a bad makes for a bad marriage.
Mm.
It's like one wants to put the feed bag on. It's like, how can you eat at a time like this? It's like, well, I don't know. I'm hungry.
I'm hungry. Oh gosh.
It's usually the women. The women shut down, and the men want to put the feed bag on.
Yeah.
For
that's
solace.
That's interesting. For solace, right?
Anyway, all right. Enough on that subject. We got to pause because we divide these podcasts into two parts. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman today with Layla Mudin, who is our nutritionist in residence, and we'll be right back. Give us a preview of what we're going to tackle in part two.
Oh, I do quite a bit of ballroom dancing, and sometimes I get little cramps in my toes.
Oh, okay.
What can I do for that?
All right. Let's talk about cramps. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Layla Mudin signing off for part one.